Business is simple. It's just not easy. We focus on three things to help you run and grow your business more easily: talent, sales, and how to scale. Can it be that simple? Talent. Develop a robust recruiting, vetting, and training process to help capable people and then help them to become who and what they want to be. Sales. Have a logical go-to-market strategy. Build the sales and marketing structure and plan around it, and then attack and execute the plan with fanatical consistency. Scale. Know where you're going, why you're going. Share with others why they would want to join you. Be clear on who's allowed to join you and what they'll need to do to stay on board. Anticipate roadblocks. Avoid them before you get stuck. And then when you do hit one, and you will, stay calm, problem solve, and find resources to get unstuck. Sounds simple, right? Simple to understand, but not easy to do. Join us as we focus on the tips and tricks and hacks for running a profitable, hyper-growth business. We'll share real-world horror stories and celebrate the victory sagas that will inspire you. This is the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. Brian Whittington with the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. We got our guest today, Aaron Browning, who is a good guy out of California, doing all kinds of crazy stuff, helping us out. And today's topic, we're going to be talking about outsource sales. Should you do it? When should you do it? In this economic climate, you know, should I do it internally? How do I regrow my team? And then how in the world do I evaluate between which way I should go? I don't know about you, Aaron, but are you getting a million pings per day? Hey, I can help you with leads on LinkedIn or all of these different companies out there. And there's much technology. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you so much, Brian. Glad to be here. Hope I can impart some knowledge. We've been living in the outsourcing world, what it seems like now, for about almost 3 years, where I am at Frontspin. So whether it's talking to outsourcers about what we provide, our sales engagement platform, or to your point, looking to outsource our things ourselves and dealing with different folks that are pitching their wares and how they do it, it certainly seems like every single day, some part of my life, we're talking outsourcing. So hopefully I can lend some good expertise.
Well, so let's start there. I mean, 3 years into this, you're talking about it every day. I mean, why in the world should anyone listen to you about outsourcing?
Well, I was going to say, in general, you should listen to me. You should listen to Aaron in general, because I call myself the king of failure. I'm all about trying, failing, and not even ever worrying about that. Just having that be part of my natural process. Like, just I'm comfortable with messing up continuously. And I found that if I do that, I'm just building this kind of foundation that I'm not afraid to do anything. And that I've constantly got this bank of expertise to just keep building up, whether it won or not. And it's not always about a true failure. It's more kind of losing all these battles and ultimately, hopefully, winning the war. So I'm kind of hoping that, just, you know, listening to me, you can kind of garner some of that experience that I've already been through that I can kind of help you with. But yeah, on the outsourcing world, it's a daily piece for me. Like I said, whether it's talking to people like yourself that run outsourcing organizations, or people that are in the sales roles there or marketing roles, I spend a lot of time in that world. It could certainly speak to, you know, how to evaluate these people, what makes good versus the bad, so to speak, and how you can be successful working with an outsourcer.
Got it. So let's hit that comfortable with failure. So basically, you got kicked in the teeth enough that we don't have to, that we can just learn from your scars and avoid those things. So we'll definitely touch that one. So yeah, now when you're talking to these different organizations, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Frontspin's niche is going after the outsourced market, correct?
Correct. Yeah, that's where we found a really good niche. I think that the first and foremost is around our telephony. Really what we see with the outsourcing community is that the telephone, they need all the channels, which we provide, that everybody does today. But the dominant channel for them is the phone. Usually because the projects they're getting are a little bit harder, and that means they got to get on the phone. And that's what you have with Frontspin. That's what our UI is phone dominant. And then we've got different workflows that really kind of layer right on to how an outsourcer works with their clients. So, but the phone is really the biggest piece of it.
Okay, so as you're working with these different clients of yours, I mean, what are they running into? What about outsourcing? What are they using that maybe us mere mortals who, you know, don't have a whole entire army of SDRs, us in the mid to, you know, small to mid-sized market that are looking to grow and have hyper growth? I mean, what should we know? What should we be doing?
Yeah, I think what's great about the outsourcers, they've already kind of cracked the egg on, you know, how to generate leads, what technology to use, the different data sources, how to train somebody, you know, and they've got this ability where you can kind of save yourself 3 to 6 months of trying to build and do that process internally. So I think for a lot of people, when they're looking to decide, it's more, how much time do I have to try to generate leads to fill the pipe and then ultimately lead to revenue? And oftentimes, you know, you have less time than you think, and you have this outsourcers. This is what they've been doing. The engine's already running. You can kind of step in to an environment that can generate leads for you within, you know, 15 to 30 days versus if you build it yourself and you know what it takes to kind of build all this, build the car, so to speak. It might take you 3 to 6 months for it's even built and running to even deliver a lead. So I think speed to market is usually the first thing that we see people looking at when they're evaluating what to do.
Now, you also lived in the marketing world as well. So we had a couple of episodes back, we had Justin Seibert on here from Digital Online Marketing, and he was talking about, you know, that obviously digital and SEO and pay-per-click and all that good stuff. So why would I not go that digital route, not do digital marketing, and why would I do this whole entire sales enablement tool, you know, whether FrontSpin or somebody else? I mean, why would I go telephone as opposed to digital?
Well, I would think you would do both. I don't see a scenario where you would just do one. I guess it depends what kind of a product you're selling. If you don't need to pick up the phone, if you can do a transaction quickly over self-service, you know, if you're pitching something in marketing, it becomes a self-service sale. You go to a website, you complete it. Most times the customers that we work with and the outsourcers are working with, they need all that, right? So you need the SEO, you need the online marketing to generate the lead, but then ultimately someone's got to pick up the phone to close that business, right? So they really do work hand in hand in the world that we live in.
Okay, now with the clients that you're working with, these outsourcers, are they doing the digital marketing for these folks as well? Are they just strictly picking up the telephone? Talk to me about what are some best practices there?
That's a good question. For the most part, the outsourcers that we work with are doing a specialized skill. And keep in mind, it truly is specialized. I think that's what people need to realize. You know, 15, 20 years ago, you could build maybe a quick little team to do lead generation, try to be the VP of sales that might manage the lead gen plus the closing, maybe even customer success. Right now, I think you'd get killed. I mean, I really do think you've got to have people. If you look today at the titles out there, there's VPs of biz dev, and that's not biz dev like partnerships. That's biz devs running the SDRs, right? It's such a specific function now. We really got to know how to build email templates. You got to be able to overcome objections. You got to be able to train all these people. So the outsourcers that we work with are really specific on what they do and don't do a lot of the other things that you're talking about, like the marketing aspect. They're just there to generate leads because, trust me, that's hard enough as it is, and they want to be an expert in that slice of the sales process.
Okay, got it. So let's talk about some of the skill sets that we should be looking at. So you said maybe the good, the bad, the ugly of these organizations. I mean, what should we be looking for? How can we tell if they are able to do these things?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of things that you want to look at when you're evaluating an outsourcer. You know, where are they recruiting the talent from? So you want to know kind of the experience of the person that's coming in. How do they, you know, retain them or train them? You know, that's going to be a big part of it. There's a lot of turnover in kind of that lead gen role. So you want to make sure you're going to have someone that's going to be on your campaign, at least for long enough that they can learn what you do and be valuable in generating leads. The tech part is important that you talked about. So the tech is, you know, what technology are they using on your behalf? Do you have access to see stuff in real time? Like a lot of customers want to be able to listen live to calls, right? So does the technology the outsourcer use enable you to do that? If not, can you listen to recordings? Because you certainly want to, you know, be part of that evaluation. And then basic reports, you want to know, you know, how many calls are they making, those types of thing. One of the biggest things that we've seen, though, when it comes to success of an outsourcer is the managers they have internally. So these are the managers that are manning those people that are managing your resources you're using day to day. Because there is so much turnover, it's just so important to have a manager that can really train and then work with the team when it comes to handling objections, anything you might name. But that project manager or the set of project managers, the better that they are, the more successful we've seen our outsourcing clients.
Okay. So, nothing new under the sun, right? It's right. Can you pick up the phone? Can you dial? Can you hire? That's really why that we have this podcast is talent. If we don't have the right talent, I don't care what we do, we're not going to be able to execute. And then the sales side from the, you talked about a little bit earlier, what's your go-to-market strategy? If you can do all e-commerce and skip it, but if you're like the majority of us and it's B2B, now actually let me back up. Does this work in a B2C space? Because we typically only do B2B. Does this work in B2C as well?
I think it's totally different in B2C. You know, same with us. We're what I deal with and our clients is predominantly B2B. I think B2C is a different animal. Maybe B2C is more SEO. It's more of that self-service versus plugging in a rep that can do it. So really more B2B. And I think that's another thing you need to look at, right? So if I look at an outsourcer and they're claiming they can do everything, they're claiming they can do B2C, they can do some B2B, there's a hybrid, they can do small business, which is kind of close to B2C where they're calling on really small businesses. I'm going to be skeptical, to be honest, because I'm going to really want someone that's specialized into what I do. So someone saying they're the jack of all trades when it comes to leads, I don't think that's the case. I think you need to specialize in one of those areas and then match it up to your customer base or proposed customer base.
Yeah. So how specialized are we talking? Is it one vertical? Is it just B2B? Is it some that are enterprise, some that are more talk to me a little bit more about that.
I think you can say, look, if you're B2B, I'm willing to talk to you. If you're doing B2C and everything else, and maybe we're not a fit, but if you specialize in B2B, then maybe we go another level and see, okay, what verticals have you worked in? If they're specific to mine, that could be of interest. It doesn't have to be, though. I don't think so. You can make a case that if they're doing an enterprise sale versus more transactional, then, you know, like a ZoomInfo is transactional versus enterprise selling to the government. If you've done some work with the government, that could help if that's what you're going after. But I do think most B2B, when it comes to leads, when it becomes to what's that lead? When we say it's a lead, it's all pretty much created equal, right? We're just trying to get that appointment. In some cases, maybe we're trying to get to a demo, but that first thing of interest, that first kind of hand raise, I think B2B is kind of, you know, horizontal.
Okay. So now I think definitions matter here because my sense is, and you can tell me I'm wrong here, Aaron, a lead isn't a lead isn't a lead. I mean, not all leads are created equal. So when you're saying a lead, what level of the funnel are we talking about?
Well, I think you define that when you go through the process with the outsourcer. They're going to have some of their own template, as I'm sure you do, about what you consider a lead. Take the feedback from the client. Some people are going to have, you know, some variables around, you know, the budget, you know, when is that budget, how much that budget has to be. Are we talking to a decision maker? But, you know, so it just depends, you know, what they want to determine. But it's usually going to be, there's got to be some level of interest, some need, and you're talking to the right title. Some companies that are startups are going to say, look, I don't care if they don't have a budget. If you get to me the right title and there's some kind of a need, then I'm going to go try to just find the budget. I'll sell to the budget. Other companies say, look, I don't want to talk to someone unless they have a budget. So some of that you can work out with your client, but there's got to be some, you know, baseline of there's a level of interest to be considered a lead.
So in my world, if you're getting down to budget, on a more complex, especially an enterprise. Are they just going through bands or, hey, do you have a budget for this? Are they going that technical or they're bringing some sales skills where there may be more of a virtual sales rep going a little bit more deeply into the pipeline?
Yeah, I would hope that they are. I mean, I think you got to be building a relationship every time you get on a call. Everything that you do has got to have some kind of relationship aspect to it, I think, these days. And it can't just be about ripping down a sheet of questions without it having some human nature aspect to it. But in some cases, Brian, depending upon what that company sells, it may be, you know, me more kind of list driven, right? Where it's more kind of a transactional thing. What do you, when you're looking at projects, when you have your reps looking at that, how do you kind of influence?
Yeah. And that's using
their own kind of personality.
Yeah. And so each of our clients is a little bit different, because the curious thing is what I'm finding is, and I don't know if this is old school or not, right? I come out of sales training, coaching, and consulting. So this is a little bit newer to me. So what I'm finding is that people are looking at a lead as a lead as a lead. And I just want a demo, or I just want this. And they're doing a lot of features and benefits. And my sense is today that SDR, because I've gotten rid of companies, clients that I was trying to buy because of how they sold, right? Even if I needed that, I just got so frustrated that, you know, you have to go through an SDR or a BDR or some type of inside sales role so they can check the box to make sure that you're worthy enough to talk to them. And I just think that's a really bad buyer's journey, or, you know, just at least a bad taste in your mouth. And I really look at that as that old BANT model. Do you have to do it? Yes. But I think it really would depend, in my sense, on what the client is looking for, how their sales methodology is. If you're just looking for somebody to smile and dial, that's one sense, not who we are. But if you're looking for more of a strategic play, then it would go a little bit more deeply into the funnel. But I'm not sure if that's just, you know, if that's unique or not.
That's so interesting, because so often we don't think about who we're handing that lead off to, right? I got the lead and I did my job and here we go. But I didn't think too much about, if they can't close it, then that lead doesn't matter, right? So as an owner of an outsourcer, is like you said, that's something you'll look at, because you could generate them 20 leads, but if they have nobody to close them, then it doesn't, that hurts, you know, that hurts everything you guys have done.
Yeah, correct. Because what we find is in the early stage, they don't even know what they do. They don't know how to message it, and they're not even, look at Steve Blank, right? Steve Blank has all this great stuff on Lean Startup and, you know, do you know, have product market fit? And a lot of times people think that they have product market fit because they like it, right? And they're finding that this doesn't really work. Or you can get a lead, whether it's from digital marketing or, because an introduction, if I get referrals, the best process or the best way to do it, right? If I can get a referral, awesome. But if I'm not getting a referral, if I'm getting net new cold, that is a different process. If I don't have a name that everybody would know, like we can name all the different companies out there, like, okay, I'll go through this rigmarole because I know you, your reputation is good enough. But my sense is technology is growing so quickly that there's people nipping at the heels, that even those big conglomerates, those people with tons and tons of money, they're going to have to change up the way they sell. And if you're, you know, human like the rest of us, and you don't have unbelievable sums of money, you're going to really have to take into consideration that buyer's journey. And so how you sell matters, how you engage them matters. And my sense is, if I'm going to get fired for not doing my job, I'd rather get fired before I start than after I go through the rigmarole learning all this stuff. So, but, you know, I don't know if, you know, probably a bunch of people are like that though.
Yeah, I mean, you almost have to, you're kind of betting on some business models in a way, or you're at least betting on the people. And if you don't get the feeling that they're going to be able to deliver, then you're right. Why would you start? Because it's an effort, right? It's an effort to go learn their market, learn how to sell it, hopefully. And then, you know, most importantly, now generate a lead. And then it goes nowhere, and that's time, right? It's a lot of time.
Yeah, because, well, when you're seeing these other outsource companies, do you have any sense of what the client is looking for? I mean, the client wants what?
The client wants to get up to speed really quickly. I think more than anything. They don't want to, they're looking at the runway going, wait, I got to go recruit, I got to go train, I got to have the tech in place, and then I got to manage it on a day-to-day basis. And all that, and all the while, I got to generate leads. And I'm looking at it going, you know, that's probably going to take me at least 90 days before that person can generate a lead, maybe longer. So the pre-built nature, so to speak, of an outsourcer is they could step in and learn that in, you know, a third of the time or less, depending upon what market you're in, and start generating leads immediately. And then the question just becomes, at what point do you decide you want to bring it in-house? Could be, you know, 6 months, 9 months down the line. Do you want to augment that outsourcer with your own team? And then some outsourcers have actually embraced the idea that they know they're going to have turnover. They know that their customers are going to try to hire their SDRs.
Yeah.
And they just let them do it, and they have it built into the contract. We are actually able now to acquire that SDR, bring them in-house, and it works for a really good relationship. So I think the biggest thing that I see is just that time to market.
Yeah, okay. So you're saying time to market, shorten down that time to market. That's interesting.
And then, you know, the specialized pieces, I can't overlook that. We stated it a couple times, is that I just feel like you can't be a jack of all trades now when it comes to sales and sales management. You know, an SDR, that lead generation, whether it sits under sales, and we could have an argument whether it sits under marketing, and right. That's probably another podcast for another time. But either way, it's so specialized now that you got to have more eyes on it and more light on it and more management than you ever have. And I think as a startup, looking at a bunch of different things you're trying to do in that sales role, it's going to be, look, it's going to take me longer to get to market if I don't use an outsourcer. And if I try to do it, I'm going to be doing it as a jack of all trades as opposed to the specialized nature that it requires. Because I guarantee if your competitor's doing it in a specialized form, they are going to kill you. And now, I know that firsthand.
Yeah. So talk to me about specialized form. So specialized form meaning each role, right?
Yeah, that you have someone that manages the SDRs and that's all they do, right? That is their job. It's not the VP of sales coming in and doing it a couple hours a day or a week. You have someone who's an SDR manager that would be equivalent to, say, a project manager at an outsourcer that is now running that group for you and looking at it and reporting on it in a way that it really requires now to be successful.
Now, you said that you're living that. So what have you seen or what are you seeing out there?
Well, I mean, our situation is kind of unique where our competitors are significant. They're significant in terms of employee count. They're significant in terms of revenue, not revenue, of money that they've raised. And so they've got a bunch of specialized roles. And a lot of that is around kind of that SDR role. And it was going to be challenging for us being self-funded to kind of be able to build a team that would be able to compete with kind of those armies.
Right.
So I just say I kind of saw it firsthand year after year in the beginning trying to compete with our competitors, knowing that they had an army of specialized SDRs, and we were trying to like kind of do it the old way. Everybody kind of did a little bit of it. Nobody was really specialized. We didn't have a true kind of owner of it, and we just got washed over. Yeah. And so, I mean, you see it now when you go to LinkedIn. You know, the LinkedIn world, Brian, that we live in is all about how to help the SDR and how important this space is and how important that role is. And that you got to give it the proper attention and management at your company if you're going to be successful. And if you can't do that, then you really, truly got to look at the outsource model.
Yeah. And you know what? Forgive me. I some of the people listening to this might not know what an SDR is. So let's talk about what is an SDR? What is a BDR? What is an inside salesperson? Can we hit that? Because they're just messed up and used interchangeably and incorrectly too often.
Yeah. I don't know if that matters. I'm sure as we define it, we can really kind of put it to the right spot. But, you know, so you got sales development rep, SDR, biz development rep.
The SDR, do you look at the SDR as the outbound and the BDR, the business development rep, as the inbound? Does it matter?
To me, it doesn't matter. It's just however you define it at your own company. I think SDR is the one that we hear the most just out in our world.
Right.
I don't know that you need to have a specific thing on. If your company's big enough and you're managing enough leads and a bunch of different channels, then I think it's probably good to define it. We've heard LDR, which I hear kind of in the partner world, you know, lead development rep. Okay. But at the end of the day, this is your first line of defense. These are the people that are generating the leads for you. These are the people that are probably turning something out of nothing. Which, yeah. I mean, it's such an important role, and it's such a hard job, and it's so underappreciated sometimes.
Well, I just wanted to hit you on that one because you just went there. It's underappreciated sometimes because it is hard. That's why there's so much turnover. I mean, you're getting your teeth kicked in, you know, hundreds of times a day. So how senior or how experienced should that SDR be?
You know, I used to always think that if you stayed in the role too long, you weren't good enough. Like you weren't good enough to become an AE. And if you pulled 10 SDRs or 100 SDRs and said, "Hey, where do you want to go?" I guarantee 80% are going to say, "I want to be an AE." Right?
Yeah, because they want to get out of that.
Right. That's what I wanted to do when I was at Oracle. And if you couldn't get out, that means you weren't good enough to get out. Actually, that's not true. I mean, some of the people that still are SDRs year after year, they just have to be really good at that part of it, which, as we're talking about, is really hard and really underappreciated. What I see a lot, I see SDRs that are so good. They're an entrepreneur, right? That's who they become, right? That's who they were anyway coming in. They had that inside them.
Right.
And they go off quickly to other things. Like look at Ryan O'Hara, who runs marketing for LeadIQ. I mean, the kid's a star in marketing, but he got his roots as an SDR. And then he just jumped right into, I think, VP of marketing at LeadIQ. And he's not the only one to kind of do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Some SDRs that are so good, they go on, they're running companies, right? They're CEO, like Amir Reeder, who the CloudTask CEO, he still does SDR work now. You know, look at Ryan Reiser, right? I mean, yeah. Ryan will still act like an SDR now. So guys that are great SDRs run companies, found companies. So sky's the limit if you're great. But to stay in the role doesn't mean that you fail. That means you're just really good at something that a lot of people are not.
Now, what makes them great? You named a couple of people. What makes them great? What, any common characteristics?
Well, I think failure, like we talked about at the beginning, is a big thing, man. I truly believe my tagline is I failed so many times, I'm almost perfect. So I feel like just being comfortable with that, being comfortable with the no, 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 and knowing that's going to probably lead to a yes, or how important it is to take maybe a maybe, you get a maybe and you convert it to a yes, you know, how much that kind of gets you going and how much you want to do that again on the next phone call. So some of it's just inherent, right? Where people were kind of born to kind of have that role. And the ones that continue with it, like Amir and Ryan, they don't forget the roots. Don't forget what they do well and bring it with them at every level are going to be wildly successful. And then some people can be trained to do it, right? They just train to kind of learn that the rejection is just a building block to make them better. But as you said, the turnover rate is high. What's the turnover rate that you see? Do you have a percentage that you track?
Yeah, so we don't have a percentage that we look for or look at. We're still kind of figuring all that stuff out. But yeah, I mean, it's, you hear all across the board. I mean, what are you seeing out there?
Yeah, I mean, depending upon how you look at the turnover, whether it is they went to an AE, they were hired out by a client, or they just kind of burned out because they didn't like it. If you factor all those things in, then your turnover is, you know, it's 50% or more, right? Yeah. If you took it just the ones that didn't make it, they were kind of, it just wasn't a fit for them. I don't know what that percentage is. I mean, in a lot of cases, people don't know what they're getting into. They want to get into sales. They think they want to be in sales, right? And then they're told, well, if you want to be in sales, you got to start here. And as managers, the reason we want them to start there is we want to put them on the phone and we want to see how many, if they can handle the rejection, if they can really handle the fact that this is a numbers game. And then ultimately, you know, X percentage burnout. I would say if you put 10 people, you know, only two or three are going to kind of make it through that. If they've never, say, made phone calls before.
Yeah, it's pretty darn interesting. So, you know, our life cycle here is we use assessment tools. We put them through pretty hard, extremely hard screening. And we are brutally transparent. I was just joking with one guy today. He came out of, he was a math teacher. So much like Ricer, right? He was a math guy. I'm like, why in the world are you getting out of that? There's so much easier ways to make money than doing this craziness. So it's hard to find those people. And when you do, it's rare air. And that's the thing that I try to pour into our team is you're in rare air. You know, this is, you know, I know you get beat up a lot, but it's getting that mindset, that grit. So let's talk a little bit about that mindset and the grit of these, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. I love that topic. So great.
Yeah. So with that idea, I mean, you said that you've gotten really comfortable with failure. Right. So how do you build that up? Was that natural? Have you always been that? You've just...
Yeah, I think there's, you know, you're talking about what to look for. I mean, so often in sales management, I feel like we're always looking for athletes, at least people that were athletes, we're always looking for athletes because that means they're highly competitive, most likely, and they've had to go through a lot of, you know, failures to kind of get through. So for me, I think it's just it's a combination of everything. It's a combination of being highly competitive and then always searching for something new, something that's a little bit more difficult to attain has always been what gets me out of bed. And that usually means that I'm gonna kind of fail along the way because it was so hard. And then just never, it's never bothered me. And then I look back and I realize, I'm like, wow, it's not so much that it didn't even bother me. It's the fact that it's been this foundation that I've just continually built up over time that allows me to just kind of easily go out and try the next thing without thinking about it, going, I'll figure it out. Or if I don't, there'll be another avenue I'll see as I'm trying to figure it out. So, you know, once again, it always kind of came back to someone that had been competitive, but I don't think that's always a fair representation. But can you, when you're evaluating people, Brian, can you talk about the rejection or how do you talk about the rejection to someone that maybe has never done that and how they would try to deal with that? Because I got to assume that that's still a big reason that someone is successful or not. Can they handle that part?
Yeah, can they continue to take that rejection? And the way that we do that is we actually through role play, and I don't want to give my secret sauce away here because, well, there's a guy by the name of Dave Curlin. If you don't know him, check out his hiring practices. So Dave Curlin. And you give him the objection right on during the interview. So it might be something along the lines of, hey, listen, you seem like a nice guy, Aaron. I'd go out, have a beer with you, but I really need a superstar, you know, somebody that can hit the phones right off the bat, win. And, you know, I'm here, nice guy, I'll hang out with you, but I don't know if I'm hearing superstar. And then that silence, and you see what they do. And too many go, oh, okay, I appreciate it.
Yeah, because most people inherently don't want to think of themselves as that good. Right? I'm not that good. I'm not that confident. I might have some confidence, but you're asking me to act like I'm superhuman. And I think that's an interesting question. Because even as you were asking it, I'm like thinking, okay, how would I answer that question?
Yeah.
And you have to have enough fortitude to say, what are you talking about? That's me. That's who I am. Right? Whether you believe it or not, right? Part of sales is you fake it till you make it. So that I like that. That's a good question.
Yeah, the best answer that I've ever got was, are we having the same conversation? Did you not just hear that role play? Right? Now, that's a little bit too assertive and arrogant.
Yeah, that's good.
Right? So that's one. But typically speaking, the people that do the best is, oh, okay. Well, can you help me understand a little bit? I mean, what were you specifically looking for?
Right.
So now they ask a question and they start to intuitively go back and correct. And that's really what we're looking for is one that's not going to take the rejection. Oh, I'm going to melt. And also one that's not going to be arrogant. What are you looking at the same thing as me? Right. That's arrogant, not assertive. What we're looking for is more that assertive,
right?
Not aggressive. Well, it's disappointing. Clearly. Can you help me understand maybe what are 1, 2, 3 things that you were looking for that I missed on? Let's go back and review this. Now you're taking control through a question. So that's what we're looking for.
But none of that is going to be able to tell if they can deal with 50 rejections in a day, day in and day out, right?
No, what if I'll tell you what that will tell you is if they can't take that one, they're not going to take rejection all day.
Right.
If they're assertive, they're going to blow up your, if they're aggressive, they're going to blow up your brand, your reputation. So yeah. What that can tell me is that they can at least handle that. So another line that I'm specifically asking whenever I want to see how are they doing, are they going to be able to live up under this is, listen, tell me about a time that you failed miserably.
Yeah.
And some, you can't believe how hard that is. It's the easiest question in the world. It's a stupid interview question. But, you know, too many people go, well, you know, one time I lost a spelling bee. If that's the only failure you had, and you're going to now go into, you know, of 150, 200 dials in a day that you're doing on one side, or 500 attempts in a day, or 800 attempts in a day, depending on your platform, you're going to have that much rejection. Losing a spelling bee is the only loss, is not what we're looking for.
Right.
So I don't know. Are you, what are you finding? I mean, are you doing anything differently? I mean, suggestions there?
No, I mean, the hiring process at the end of the day, it's a little bit of close your eyes and point. Even when you think you got it all right, you don't, right? So there's a little bit of a numbers game to it. I think to that end, being able to evaluate the people really quickly, that then not be afraid to cut them loose or let them know it's not the right fit. And maybe you see a fit for the other places in your organization. Maybe you can manage to some of it. Once again, coming back to that project manager at the outsourcer, just like you would an internal person that would run your SDR team, that person becomes so critical for this very reason, right? You didn't quite get the hiring right. Now you got to get you got to train that person up. You got to manage them. Or you gotta move on from them. So the project manager can really help kind of fill a lot of those holes or smooth things over that you're not always gonna get right. Because, you know, like I said, everybody in your organization could be sold on a single person. This is it, they're gonna do it. Just like drafting in any in major league sports, and then it's wrong, right? Yeah. They flame out.
Yep, and unfortunately you're dealing with people, because even the right person today has a life event tomorrow, and is a changed person. So it is difficult. So, all right. Well, now let's talk about business case, return on investment. Who should really look at outsourcing? Is it the new person? Is it the more mature? Is it somewhere in between? Is there a sense for all of it? Help me understand, what's the return on investment? When's a good time to look at outsourcing?
I think since the pandemic, We've seen more of a draw to the outsourcing. I think as we're hiring people back, there's a lot of people going, maybe I don't want to hire full time. Maybe I want to look at covering my risk a little bit and looking at an outsourcer to bring that role back a little bit easier. And then the other thing, because of the pandemic and so much more now being inside, right? You have so many of these outside roles that have been diminished, or they're temporarily changed, or they're completely changed because of less travel. Now you've got big companies. I don't know if you guys have seen any of this, Brian, but you've got these bigger companies that had this larger outside sales force and now have to figure out a way to pivot and train these people on the inside, or most probably better yet, look at an outsourcer to kind of fill that role, because they, once again, that car is already running. So you need something to execute on an inside role, lead generation specific, could even be quota. You know, some of our outsourcers do closing, right? They do that quota carrying. But now in the pandemic, if you got companies that aren't used to that model, the outsourcing gets you up really quick. So, you know, you can start looking at ROI that's pretty significant for some of these companies. I don't get too deep into how someone might evaluate the return on investment. I think maybe you're probably closer to that than I am.
Yeah.
But definitely in this pandemic, I would think for outsourcers, there's kind of a new kind of influx of lead opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, from what we typically see is anywhere between 40 to 60%. I mean, it can be that substantial, because whenever you look at technology and all these other pieces, plus the training, coaching, consulting that goes along with it, you know, just trying to figure out the tech stack. I mean, how difficult is it to get all the toys to play together? It's insane.
Right.
So, okay, got it. So, yeah. So really then those that are maybe have an outside sales team that can't travel any longer, they're having to get reskilled. retooled to be able to do this inside selling, this SDR work to pick up the phone. And my sense is a lot of them are extremely relational, right? If I own a territory, I'm going to have, we always used to call it professional visiting. Hey, how are you today? Let me give you some donuts, right? And that's not sales.
Yeah.
And now they're actually having to sell and break open new doors without ever connecting to somebody. I mean, you're on a telephone. I don't even see you eyeball to eyeball. I'm not making video calls. I'm making telephone calls and emails.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that part of that model is almost kind of blown up, right? It's like, why would I want to bring that person inside? Because let's be honest, most of those outside guys are not cheap.
Yep.
Right. So now I'm going to bring that person inside. They're instantly not comfortable. And you can probably tell that immediately, right? They're used to being in front of the client, picking up the phone 100 times a day isn't going to happen, right? They won't even do that in a week. It's just not what they do, right? And I'm a big believer in, it's pretty hard to change your stripes, right? Once you're in that role. So you often wonder, are those companies just better suited outsourcing lead generation, you know, for those guys? And maybe kind of change the dynamic of, or change the structure. Maybe you're not going to have as many of the outside guys partnered with kind of the inside role. I would think a lot of that has to be changing right now.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of that, especially with more mature companies that are having to absolutely change your go-to-market strategy. And this is a perfect ideal for them. We're starting to develop and train up some of our people to be what are called VSR. Virtual sales rep. That way they can take it from top of the funnel all the way to close. That pipeline management, they can do the whole entire, because back in the old days, you know, whenever I was on the streets, that's what we had to do. You know, I had one guy saying, this is kind of hard. Well, yeah, imagine doing this without this technology, whenever you had to source your own leads and they didn't have LinkedIn. I mean, and you actually had to hit the buttons on the telephone, right? I mean, it was completely different back in the day. So, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I got a story. So I was a stockbroker out of college. And your first day, I mean, you go through this training so you can take the Series 7 and this other stuff. But really, it's at the end of the day, it's about cold calling. And all you did was, and most kids don't even know this because they don't have them anymore. We had these things guys call phone books, right? It's a big old book. It's huge. Most people use it as a paperweight. But we could buy these phone books called reverse directories. And what they did was they listed every house on the same street. So everybody knew the best streets in your neighborhood, right? You can name them right now off the top of your head.
Yep.
Where were the biggest houses, right? So I can now call everybody at that house, and that's it. There was no LinkedIn. There was no ground cover. There was no air cover. There was no nothing. That was a true cold call. I mean, I can get on about what really is cold calling, and people get mad at me because what a lot of these guys are doing now isn't cold calling. Okay, yeah. It's just calling. Okay, cold calling. That was true cold calling. I'm cold calling you, and I have no idea about anything. So other than you got a big house,
right? So. Yeah, and that's the thing, because you have to be able to do that if your company isn't doing digital marketing for lead conversion. Is it demand generation, lead conversion, pipeline management? Right, because you have to be able to do all of those. Then once pipeline management. How much are you as the owner going to ask this person then to do account management or customer success, whatever you're calling it? Because each and every single one of those roles takes specific different tactics and abilities. Yep. And having somebody that's a hybrid and able to hit all of those, they're going to be better at one than the other. But right. To have somebody to be able to go the whole way through, I think is a critical skill these days.
Interesting. Do you think that's dependent upon what you're selling, or do you think you can apply that across a lot of different companies, industries?
Well, I think you can sell it across any industry. I think it's the value per contract that matters. What's the value per contract? What's the lifetime value of the contract? If it's below, say, $7,000 profit per contract, you're going to likely go e-commerce or all inside, or like really not do that. It's going to be, you know, hey, can I take that? It's going to be order taking. If it's above that $7,000 per contract, or maybe $20,000 lifetime value, where you start to get in a little bit more complexity, but it's right at that level, that $5,000, $7,000, $10,000 profit, that value is probably where you're going to need that VSR. Above that, you can have this structured SDR, BDR into account AEs, into customer success, because you can handle the overhead. But in that middle, that weird middle part where nothing seems to make sense, that might be a good alternative.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, no, I like that. If it's a fragmented way to, if it's the market's almost fragmented in a way where you can come in and really make hay, so to speak, kind of offering the full cycle, what I would call a full cycle rep that you're calling a VSR. It's an interesting skill set. As an entrepreneur, it's kind of what you find yourself doing, right? When you're starting out a company, you're doing all those things. So
correct.
To have someone that can do that, and like you said, they're going to be some better at lead gen, some will be better at closing, some are better at taking care of the client when they're done. But that's interesting for the right market and for the right client. I mean, for the right client that realizes, hey, I could use, you know, Brian and his company to satisfy a bunch of different roles. And now, as you said, the ROI really starts to look compelling, puts a lot of execution on you, right? And the
You're
team,
correct.
That's a lot.
But yeah. And the beauty is whenever you start to identify the key sweet spots of that person, then you can get them to specialize. As you start to grow, you can get that person to specialize. So it works out in the long run anyway, because that's what they're going to be doing anyway. So then you hire a specialist. Now that you have additional revenue coming through door, now you can hire a specialist if you can, or you have to get another VSR. And now that one's probably doing more of account management type role.
Right.
So yeah.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yep. So now tell me this. I mean, what's been your biggest challenge, biggest lesson that you've learned? You said you have a million and one failures. What's been the biggest lesson that you can teach us so we don't do the same thing?
Wow, there's some simple ones. I mean, don't ever do anything for the money. I can guarantee you'll be unhappy when you finally get the money. So you really want to make sure you're doing something that you believe in. I think for me, I mean, that's so important for me. I mean, I'll sell anything. Doesn't matter what it is, a service, a product, as long as I kind of I believe in it and I can relate to it and I feel like I'm helping people, then it just makes it really easy to get behind it. And that really can be anything. Don't limit yourself on what that could be. And certainly don't ever let the W-2, the 1099 or whatever dictate what, you know, that role you take or that job you take, because I guarantee it won't be what you expect in the end. And then the other thing that's big that I see so much today, and I was always pretty good at it, and then I really had to refine it here at Frontspin, is don't think you can sell everybody. It's okay, right? It's okay. Sometimes reps get stuck on the littlest thing, I can do this deal, or they have a hard time gauging whether they're interested or not. And we call people that aren't interested pikers. I have my whole life since we were as a broker, these people that waste your time, but they're never really going to buy, right? And so being able to pick that up quickly is a skill you really want to learn. And then you want to stick to it. You don't ever want to deviate from it. And often, depending upon what you're selling and what you're doing, the more you say no, the better things go, right? Because you say no to some people, they're going to come back, and now they do become a prospect you didn't expect because you did tell them no. Or you told them no because you didn't want to waste time with them. And that's even better because now I can go spend time with other people. So I think not chasing the money and learning how to say no, and you could say learn how to say no in all aspects of life, is going to serve you well and save you a lot of time. And it's really kind of self-cleaning in a way.
Yeah. So back in my old sales training days, it's go for the no. Right? If it's a no, if it's an NO, I want a KNOW. And if you're driving towards the no, there is zero pressure. So absolutely, right. You know, and being able to take that rejection, some will, some won't. So what next?
You're just going to giggle and on to the next one. I mean, because you like, it's a simple analogy we've been using in sales forever. The more no's I get, the more likely I am to get to a yes, right?
And,
I think, right, we could talk about all the technology and all the training and all the management. We could talk about all the shit that's available. But at the end of the day, you got to be motivated. You got to have a desire. You got to see that goal in mind. And then you got to be willing just to deal with the rejection and let it kind of roll off you, or learn to let it roll off you. And the faster that you do that, you keep plowing forward, the more successful you're going to be. And I could tell you, if you're successful at the lead gen level, if you're able to do what truly is making something out of nothing for a lot of these roles, sometimes you get into the cushy role where the leads are good, the tech is a unicorn, and it's not really as difficult as it might be for another. But often that's not the case. But I can tell you, yeah, if you're successful at doing that, the sky's the limit for you. And whatever you do, you know, you may not stay as that lead gen person, but I can tell you, doing that skill set well is going to serve you no matter where you go, running your own company, starting your own company, going into marketing, whatever it is. The roots of it are in dealing with the rejection and, you know, breaking out and being successful in that lead gen role.
Yeah. So I think it's dealing with the rejection and the ability to quick connect and have really good communication skills. I mean, that's really what you're talking about there. I love it. All right. So how about, resources? What should we be reading? What should we be using? I mean, what can help us? One thing.
Yeah, I think LinkedIn's got so much great stuff that we see. I follow, you know, obviously we talked Ryan Reiser a couple times. He's actually the reason that you and Brian and I know each other is Ryan. So thanks, buddy.
Hey, Ryan.
He's the king. And the guys at SDR Revolution, SDR Rev, got a lot of great resources for SDRs that people should check out. And, you know, just in general, I mean, LinkedIn has just been amazing. I think SDRs can get lost in all the different resources and use them. But to that point, do not get lost in this stuff. Don't get caught up in everything social. You still got to do this job. You still got to bang out the numbers. At the end of the day, I don't care how good you are. You could be the greatest, the smoothest, overcome every rejection. If you make 10 fucking calls a day and I make 100, I'm going to beat you every single time. Yep. So all this stuff is great, but you got to put in the time every day, same numbers every day. It's just like working out. If you do that and you combine the relationship skills and everything you can, all the resources out there, man, sky's the limit.
Yep, 100% agree. So what's the future hold? What do we got to be watching out for? What do we need to anticipate?
It's so hard to predict. The people try to predict the end of the SDR world. We see that all the time, that we're not going to need them. And I can't say that. I can't see that crystal ball enough to get rid of it. I mean, Oracle started doing it back in the 90s, and here we are, you know, got 30 years later, and it's even more relevant. So I don't see that going anywhere. Obvious things for me, and they're true to what I do every day, is video. I mean, video, depending upon the size of your company, and for us, it was just critical, right? Because small player, big players, tons of money. And so me being on a phone call didn't have the same impact as me jumping on a Zoom session with a prospect. So for us, being in front of that client on video sooner, our conversions probably went up 30%. Just by being willing to get on, like, a discovery call was done on Zoom instead of me getting on the phone. And that was because, look, we're young, we're smaller, we want you to get comfortable. You get more comfortable with human nature by seeing somebody versus just hearing them on the phone. So I don't think that goes away. Obviously, once the pandemic hit, now Zoom is a four-letter word in a good way, right? Everybody knows who they are. Everybody's using them constantly. So between that, between the video and everything more we're going to keep doing on our damn phones, I think you got to be ready for all that and how that fits into our world. But man, video depending on the size of your company is almost priceless when it comes to getting people comfortable and then getting more business. And so, it's not going away, obviously.
Yeah. This is a new face-to-face now. So video on, in terms of video calls, video technology here, but are you talking also video for email, or are you strictly talking like Zoom or?
Yeah, I mean, we do a little bit of that. We use more of the video for our CSMs and just kind of doing help and stuff, you know, through Vidyard. I haven't done a ton of, you know, hi, this is Aaron, prospecting to you. Admittedly, I know some of our clients do. You can actually use it for free. It's kind of a free feature you would get with FrontSpin embedding it in emails. But I'll admit, I haven't been doing much of that, and probably should, because you can. I just spoke about how great it is when I get to a discovery call. But yeah, I think it's all coming to the future in terms of more and more video.
Got it. Okay. Hey, I appreciate it. So let's wrap up with, you know, Aaron, who should reach out to you? How should they do it? And why should people reach out to you?
Oh man, if you want to know anything about sales or, you know, what it takes to be a successful SDR or, you know, any kind of thing around just the struggles in that, I'm happy to help people anytime. God, I'll even do side-by-side calling with people if it helps. As kind of a competition. Anybody in the outsourcing world, so if you're running an outsourcing organization, love to talk to you about what we've done for clients like yourself in terms of making their job easier, saving you money, making you money with the technology? Because what we've done and what we've built, outsourcer focused, and the feedback from outsourcers over the last couple of years is really cool. And you can hit me up on LinkedIn. That's the best way to reach me.
Cool. So Aaron Browning, thank you very much. So Aaron Browning from FrontSpin. So Brian Whittington with the Talent Sales and Scale Show. Until next time, get after it. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.